Greetings to all of God's people. This is again Mordecai Joseph. We're today in lesson 177 in the book of Acts. And at this point, the accuser, Tertullus, the orator, the deceiver in essence, a lawyer, just like you know they are to this very day, as we mentioned in the last lesson, he's trying to deceive in essence the governor and all those people who are there, just like they do to this very day, deceiving the jury and bring them to actually think, and they've done it successfully, unfortunately, many times, to believe that the victim is a criminal, you see, and the criminal is an innocent person, he's an angel. They've done it many times in rape cases and in all kind of cases. And that's the world in which we are, a world of insanity, a world of wickedness, of viciousness, of malice, of darkness, and that's the way the devil, as Paul would say later on about the devil, the way he does his work, he appears as an angel of light. And no marvel that his ministers also would appear as ministers of righteousness. That's in essence what a lot of the lawyers are, unfortunately. They appear as ministers of righteousness. They're going to plead the case for this poor, innocent person. And talk about, you know, his childhood and, you know, all the miserable experiences he went through. And everybody begins to feel pity about that person. And they totally forget about the victim and the condemned. The victim ultimately letting this guy off the hook, you see, and then he goes out laughing at them and whole of the society and goes and does it all over again. And he's brought back to judgment again. And another lawyer or the same guy does the same thing. And a lot of people have got away with murder several times with all kind of evil things that they have committed. Well, that's the nature of the devil. And this is what we read here. And so in verse 5 we continue with, you know, this oratory appearance of lies as truth and truth as lie. That's in essence what he's doing here. He's saying in verse 5, "For we have found this man a plague, a creator of dissension among all the Jews throughout the world." So it's not that the dissenters are the evildoers and the ones who are creating the whole problem. They're the ones who are withstanding God himself and the word of God and the truth. Oh no, this is the evil man. And that's the way the devil presents all things. And that's exactly what God told his own people. In the prophet Isaiah, you read those words, as he spoke through Isaiah. In chapter 5 he said, "Woe to those who call evil good." How would people call evil good? And good evil, obviously, because there is a spirit of the devil in them, not the spirit of truth, not the spirit of God, the same attitude, the same mind, the same nature, you see, and that's why they function like that, and they actually believe it. Those people who do those kind of things, they actually believe it. They're so warped and demented and twisted in their minds and hearts, and they behave in that manner, and they get to the point where they actually believe their own words, their own lies. And so that's what they do. If you're a good man, you're an evil person. If you're an evil person, oh, he's a good guy. And it says, "Woe unto this kind of people who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet and sweet for bitter." And that's exactly what this Tertullus was doing. And all the false prophets were doing to the prophets of God. And then verse 23 continues, "Who justify the wicked for a bribe." That's what lawyers do. They don't care about the criminal. There are very few of them who have a conscience where they are not going to take certain cases where they know that the guy is totally guilty and they cannot bring themselves to defend a person like that, because they know that lawyers are always lying. That's the only way they can get away with murder, so to speak, and get the defendant off the hook. They have to lie, they have to deceive, they have to mislead the jury by their oratory. And so they justify the wicked for bribe and take away justice from the righteous man. And that's the way the devil works. And that's the way this man is working here. And that's the way the false prophets who claim to be the prophets of Jesus Christ, you know, the ministers of Jesus Christ, the cardinals, the bishops, the popes and all that, the vicars of Christ, that's the way they function. and they are convinced in their own minds and hearts that they are true people. While all those guys out there, you know, they're the evildoers. And so this is what this man is doing, and hey, you know, people after him, you know, followed in his footsteps. In this case, this is a Jew doing that. And then later on, others, supposedly not in the true church, the Holy Mother Church, they've done it to the very people of God, the followers, the genuine followers of Jesus Christ, and they do it to this very day. And so he's saying that this guy, he's causing dissension among all the Jews throughout the world, everywhere. And a ringleader, you know, the founder, ringleader, the head of the sect of the Nazarenes. That's what they call them. It's just a sect. And generally in the Jewish community, they accepted all kinds of sects. The sect of the Essenes, the sect of the Pharisees, the sect of the Sadducees. You see, the sect of this person, that person, or this group, or that group. That was very common. They all went to the temple, went to the synagogue, and people didn't say, oh, you know, well, you know, you're a Pharisee, I don't want you here, or you're a Sadducee or an Essene. They all accepted one another as long as they were in the same faith. But they had, you know, some differences. Just like today. There are those ultra-Orthodox Jews. They're Orthodox Jews. They're conservative Jews. You see, they're Reformed Jews. They're Reconstructionist Jews. But they can all go to the same temple. Nobody's going to stop them from coming there. You see, even though they know that they have various differences. And, you know, unless they come in and try to impose their own way of understanding on others, then they will be in trouble, throw them out. But if they don't, you know, they come to worship God, nobody's going to stop them from doing it. And with these Nazarenes, you know, the sect of Nazarenes, you know, the followers of Jesus from Nazareth, that's all it meant. Well, they continued to be called that way for centuries to come. And then in the 4th century, as we read that account several times before, I don't have it before me here, so I cannot quote it exactly. But basically, Origen, making a commentary, writing a commentary on Isaiah 8:14, is referring to these Nazarenes. Now, these people have got a problem. He said, you know, they're all fettered, you know, with all this law, you know, the old law, you know, circumcision, Sabbath, and, you know, the clean and unclean animals and things like that. And he said, they are, and another writer that was also writing there, Epiphanius, I believe, all that in the 4th century, talking about the Nazarenes, this sect. He said, you know, that they are doing everything in like fashion, like manner, just like the Jews, with the exception of the belief in the Messiah. And he said, because of that, these people are not Christians. We are Christians, but they're not. You see, that's how the devil worked. And that's how people came to believe in so-called Christianity. By believing lies to be true, and truth to be lies. And light became darkness, and darkness became light, and sweet became bitter, and bitter became sweet. And so they totally warped, demented, and deceived people. And since people were not educated, they went for it, because they gave them an easy religion. You don't have to do anything. Christ did it all for you. You don't need to do the law. That's a horrible thing. You see, that's harsh. That's, you know, that old God, the Old Testament, it's not, you know, he gave them those strict rules and regulations. And they never told them, now wait a minute, that God was Jesus Christ. And he's the same yesterday, today, and forever. He gave them that law, and he commanded them to walk in that law. And he told them that heaven and earth shall pass, but not one jot or one tittle from that very law, which they called, you know, all that old stuff. Harsh, bad, not good for us, nailed to the cross. You see, let the Jews have it if they want it. Yeah, that's the way it is. And all these people who have been deceived that light is truth, and truth is light, that is, you know, light is, you know, or truth is darkness, and lies and deceptions, and the other way around, they're all going to appear before Jesus Christ. They'll say, now, wait a minute, you know, all this time we walked in Christianity. We were Christians. We followed you. And you tell them, no, you didn't. I never knew you. Never had a relationship with you, because you're all workers of iniquity. You are lawless. You have no Torah. You've been misled. You've been going, you know, down the road of into darkness and perdition and destruction and lies and deceptions. Oh yeah, with a mixture of some truth about me, because the false ministers always came in his name, taught all kind of good things about him, and then deceived many when it came to his Torah, to his law. And they do it to this very day, and they convince people, if you keep the law, you're under a curse. You see, totally twisting and perverting the words of the Apostle Paul. And claim, well, he's the one that taught us all these things and we are now in the light. Now, this is what this guy is doing here. So the first one that sold, you know, people on this line was not a Gentile, but a Jew. Tertullus. And all the Jews are in the high priest. But now the Pharisees, the overwhelming majority of them, to the end of time of the preaching of the Apostle Paul, they still say, well, we don't see anything wrong with this guy. You know, he's teaching the same law that we teach. And so this Paul is presented as the ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. And in essence, he was not. There were all the apostles there. And he was one of the leaders. And his branch was to, basically, the circumcision and the uncircumcision. But he seemed to be the most active, you see, in his role. And the apostles, to begin with, most of them went to other lands where the children of Israel were, you know, the 10 tribes and other tribes of Israel, while he was going all over the place. Both Jews and Gentiles were being converted, and so they picked on him as the ringleader. They didn't say one of the ringleaders, they said he's the ringleader of the sect of the Nazarenes. Later on, those that came from the mold of the pagan church, you see, the Gentile church of Rome and other places, they twisted all these words here and said, oh yeah, Paul was a ringleader of the Nazarenes, you see, but they didn't say Nazarenes as time went by. They say he was ringleader or the founder of Christianity. And they forgot to say that what the Apostle Paul taught and what the Jews recognized in his day and the Pharisees recognized in his day was exactly as the Torah. Because that's how they presented the Nazarenes. Those Nazarenes, you know, they keep the law. They keep the old law. They keep circumcision and Sabbath and holy days and clean and unclean and so forth and circumcision. And the only difference between them and the Jewish community is that they believe in the Messiah, while the others, in other words, they believe that Jesus Christ is the Messiah. The Jews believe in the Messiah, but not that particular personality. You see, and that's the only difference that's said between them. Well, this is what the Bible tells us that the Apostle Paul was the leader of, or the ringleader of, which the whole Jewish community recognized. Not of what became later on so-called Christianity that has very little to do with it. A totally different religion. You see? Well, that's how the devil works. And that's why, you read in Revelation, the devil deceives the whole world. And that's why God called that pagan church, that Gentile church, that injected a lot of paganism into it. And to this very day, people follow it. They worship the sun, you know, the day of the sun. They call it Sunday. You know, they say, well, no, we're not worshiping the sun. We're worshiping Jesus Christ. And so they twisted all kind of things there. And Easter, Ashtoreth, the goddess, Astret, you see, a Canaanite goddess, and they call it Easter, you know, Passover. Christ is not our Easter, he's our Passover. Totally different thing, different concept, different idea. So they don't keep Passover, they keep Easter. And Christmas, the feast of Saturnalia on December 25th, that turned into supposedly the birth date of Christ. And he was born nowhere near that date, but somewhere between February and March. You see, and most likely, you know, in March, as we went through it before in the book of John, chapter 3, you know, the first, actually, chapters, he makes it very plain, chapter 2 and 3, I believe, where he made very plain when Christ was born. He was crucified on Passover. He was 30 years old when he began his ministry, and he was 30 at the time, about 30. So he was not almost, you know, he was not 30, you know, exactly, he was about 30 because he was born a little bit earlier than that. It makes very plain that 3 years later, the third Passover, that's when he was crucified. You see? So if he's about 30 when he began his ministry, and that was Passover time, right before Passover, and he's crucified around Passover, the third one, you know, 3 years later on, you see? Again, around Passover, that's the time when he began his ministry, and that's the time when he, around that time, he was born, a little bit earlier. So, sometimes in March, and so forth. And so they deceived the whole world, and so this is what the devil is doing here at this point. Taking the righteous men of God, the prophet of God, the servant of God, the messengers of God, the apostles of Jesus Christ, and he's turning him into the villain, into the criminal. Well, later on we find out these people didn't fall for it. And so he says, this is what he found this man to be. And he was not, obviously. They were just lying. That's what oratory does to people, unfortunately. You know, the flower, fine flower, yeah, that is a flowery kind of a speech that deceives people, and people remember only those beautiful words, but they forget about the real message behind it, the real words. And so he said he even tried to profane the temple, another lie, and we seized him and wanted to judge him according to our law. Well, he was preaching the same law. And that's why he was there, keeping the law, obeying the law, and taking on upon himself and all those men for which he paid, for the process of purification in accordance with the law of God. So it's a lie after lie after lie, which is presented as light and as truth, with beautiful language. Just like simple people would say, a rose is a rose in any color, shape, or word. It's still a rose. You cannot change that. All the flowery language in the world cannot deceive ultimately, and the truth remains the truth. Now, this man is going to meet his day in court when he's going to be presented by the facts, which he probably knew and willfully twisted them anyway. Verse 7, but the commander Lysias came by and with great violence took him out of our hands again lying and lying and lying. Once you begin lying, you continue in that way because that's what the devil is all about. He's the father of lies, he's a liar, and he's teaching his children to be just like him. And so it is to this very day. And we call them politicians and lawyers and all kind of things like that, and they are everywhere. And the whole world is filled with them. That's why people are so deceived. Verse 8, commanding his accusers to come to you, by examining him yourself, you may ascertain all these things of which we accuse him. And of course, he couldn't find anything that what they said was truth, ultimately. And the Jews also assented. So, those that came with him. One of the Pharisees, so when you read the Jews here, it's a specific little group that came there. And mainly of the Sadducean sect. They're the ones that went for it, not the others. And the Jews also assented, maintaining that these things were so. So all of them became liars. All of them were deceivers. All of them were of the devil, and yet they were all claimed to be of God. And that's the way the devil works, and to this very day. Then Paul, after the governor had nodded to him to speak, you see, due process, he's not going to listen to these people, no matter how flowery their language is and the great orator that they had, it's neither here nor there. Rome, with all of its evils, still had the due process, still sought a measure of judgment and justice. And when you study the beginning of the Roman Empire, or Rome, the city, the republic, those men had quite a bit of decency in them. That's how it began. And then men of corruption later on took over, unfortunately, and totally warped and perverted an awful lot, and Rome wasn't Rome anymore. A lot of cities, a lot of countries, a lot of ideals, a lot of religions, a lot of all kind of things like that begin with a person that has a measure of decency in him, and he wants to see things done right because he sees a lot of iniquity. And then those that come later on pervert, pollute, defile, contaminate, warp, and dement everything that that person stood for, and they create something totally different, and people fall into it, and they think, well, that's the way it was from the beginning. And so they've done to the religion of God to this very day. Because, as Christ said, unfortunately, about his own people, and he didn't say it about all of them, because all majority followed him, but the ones that went for that kind of reasoning, which was demonic, devilish, he said, your father the devil. And he didn't say about the entirety of the Jewish community, because the majority followed him. He wouldn't say that about them. But those rebel rousers, the dissenters, that were always there, and we always have to recognize that, because the pagan religion, the Gentile religion, deceived the whole world to believe all the Jews were that way. That's a part of the deception. Well, if all the Jews are that way, we can hate all of them, no matter where they are at any given generation, and to this very day. A lot of people in their ignorance and blindness, supposedly are ministers of Christ, or people of God, people of Christ, and things like that, continue to believe these lies to this very day. And they poison the minds and the hearts of their children from a very young age, whenever they go through these accounts, and they put the blame on all the Jews, and they forget to emphasize, oh no, the majority followed him. The majority believed. Even of the Pharisees, there were many, and even of the Sadducees, there were many of the priests. Great company of the priests became believers, followers of the faith. They didn't never mention all those, which in essence were the majority of the nation, of the people, and then gradually, unfortunately, they went by the wayside when it came to the second, third, and fourth generation, because now there was a false religion, Christianity, and was totally different, and obviously the Jews didn't want to have anything to do with it. You see? And they departed as time went by from the faith, because they've been sold a lot of lies, both by their own rabbis, as time went by, and by others from the outside community. And so here, all the Jews are on it, are in on it, they believe it, you know, and they testify, oh yes, that's true. And then Paul, after the governor had nodded to him to speak, answered, inasmuch as I know that you have been for many years a judge of this nation, I do the more cheerfully answer for myself. So you've been a judge here, you know what has been happening all the time, you know what I've been teaching, you know what Christ was teaching, you know what the disciples were teaching in Jerusalem, you know what the law is all about, you're not in ignorance, so I feel confident that you are going to understand what is really happening here. And therefore, he said, I do the more cheerfully answer for myself, because you may ascertain that it is no more than 12 days since I went up to Jerusalem to worship. And he's nice, using all this flowery language and sweet, nice words, you know, to curry favor with him and to appease him and to, you know, stroke his ego and things like that, as the other orator had done, Tertullian. He said, well, you've been a judge here. You know what's happening. I'm going to tell you exactly what really happened. And he said, I went up to Jerusalem to worship. Why would a Jew, why would a, you know, the founder of Christianity go up to Jerusalem to the temple to worship unless he was a part of that faith, all that law, all the temple teachings? You see? And everybody recognized that, with the exception of the dissenters who wanted to twist and pervert everything. So God makes it very plain. What was that faith that Christ was preaching, that Jesus Christ was preaching through his disciples, be it the Apostle Paul or others? It was always the same faith. One God, one truth, one law. And Christ and God were one, not divided. Not two different gods, two different laws, two different theologies and faith and all that. And the disciples didn't present anything different. So it goes to Jerusalem. Why not? That's natural for a follower of Christ to do. For the follower of the God of Israel who gave them the law in Sinai, it's the most natural thing to do. Not to do it will be extremely unnatural and wrong and evil. And so it goes to Jerusalem to worship. And they neither found me in the temple disputing with anyone, nor inciting the crowd, either in the synagogues in Jerusalem. And he couldn't do it if it was, you know, for different faith. By now, this is the end of his ministry, almost. So I didn't find him in the synagogues or in the city. Nor can they even prove the things which they say now, which they now accuse me. You know? They cannot prove the things of which they accuse him. They just talk. Sweet, beautiful words. That mean nothing. They cannot back it up. And that's what all the lawyers generally function when they get the murder of the hook. They can't back up what they say. They're just working on the emotions of the jury with that beautiful oratory and flowery language. And deceive them and warp them and dement them until they begin to see the devil is an angel and the angel is a devil. And that's how they get them of the hook. And to this very day. Why? Because they're all, unfortunately, as Christ would put it, of their father the devil. And he knows how to do it. And they're given to it. And if we're not careful, many times when we embellish the truth, when we change it, when we twist it, when we want to present facts as if we are the righteous people, instead of exposing our sins and iniquities for what they are, and confessing our faults, our sins, well, we don't do that. We like to embellish things. And even when we know we are guilty and everybody knows that, we still like to justify ourselves and present it in very innocent terms and things like that, in order to deceive. That's how men of perversion came up with this law, that you can plead guilty by reason of insanity. If you did it or you didn't do it, that's all that counts. You see? Doesn't make a difference if you're insane or not insane to begin with. Most of those people are not. Or anybody can claim insanity when he committed a crime. You know, just not thinking straight. You see? I ate some snacks, you know, they gave me the, you know, what they call the Twinkie defense. Oh, people like to function like that because that's the way the devil is, the father of all of us to one degree or the other when we are given to his lies and deceptions and allow them to continue to reside in us, and even the very people of God. The great men of God, if they're not careful, they can fall for it. Yeah, like, you know, Aaron, high priest, the leader of Israel, in charge of Israel when Moses is gone. He's telling Moses, well, I really don't know what happened, you know, I just took all the gold, you know, threw it into the fire, and this calf, you know, and it just came out. I don't know what happened. You know? Why? Why talk like that? Why not realize what you have done and confess it? And that's why, you know, Moses later on said, you know, God was so furious with him, wanted to kill him. Well, all of us are subject to that, and we have to understand of what manner of spirit we are when we behave in that manner. And so Paul was going to set things straight. I haven't done any of that, and there is nothing they can do to prove it. They're just words, bunch of words, and they mean nothing. But this I confess to you, that according to the way, not Christianity, there is no Christianity on the scene. Nobody mentions anything about it. Nobody knows anything about it. Paul knows nothing about it. He knows it's the way that God, when he called Abraham, he says, walk before me and be perfect. You walk in a way. And all the prophets talked about the way, and King David talked an awful lot about the way. Blessed and happy is the man who walks in the way. That's the name of the religion of the Father, of the Most High. The supposedly, you know, the old harsh monster, you know, the strict rules. And that's the only one that Jesus Christ talked about. I kept my Father's commandments. You see? Now what happens when people listen to all those smooth talkers who call themselves ministers of Christ, or on the other hand, in the Jewish community, the rabbis? They don't teach the law of God the way. They give lip service to it, and they twist it and pervert it and dement it and present their own interpretation of it, which they claim God gave them from Sinai. Well, that's the way the devil works. He deceives the whole world. He's got them everywhere. He's not choosy. And most people fall for it to this very day, and yet they all think, oh, we are the servants of the living God. You know, you've got a false religion. Other false religions that claim, well, we are the believers. We're the true believers. You are the infidels, and so forth. Well, that's the way the devil worked from the beginning of time. Deceiving. And so the whole world, not part of it, not, you know, segments of it, but the whole world is being deceived. And that's what God recorded. And people don't believe it. Until they come before Christ and he'll tell them, I never knew you, the God of heaven and earth, the King of Israel. He'll tell them, I never knew you. I never knew you, the rabbis. I never knew, you know, the priests and the ministers and the pastors and evangelists and popes and cardinals and all that. Never knew you. You never walked in the way. You walked in your own ways. You see? You're lawless. You got your own law, your own halakha, your own catechism, your own Christian doctrines and principles. You know, a little bit of truth in it. That's vomit in his sight. He says, I don't recognize you. I don't know you. Get out of here. You can claim all you want that you know the God of heaven and earth in whatever religion you are. Christ, God, they don't know us if we do not walk in the way, their way, as they taught it, from Genesis 1:1 to the last verse in Revelation. That's their way. And that's what Paul is saying here. I confess. You know, I'm guilty of that, of walking in the way. You see? According to the way which they call a sect. So I worship the God of my fathers. He didn't say I worship Jesus Christ. He said I worship the God of my fathers. The God of Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, who spoke to them by the angel of the Lord, which we became later on Jesus Christ. You see? Who spoke to them on Mount Sinai through the one that he sent to this earth, the angel of the Lord, who became their king, their husband, and then came in the flesh and became Jesus Christ, the anointed Savior, which he always was. He was always the Redeemer of Israel. The anointed of the Lord. They just didn't recognize him. The ones who did not. Others did. As Nathanael said, oh, you're the King of Israel. You're the Son of God. Not everybody was ignorant. It says, this is the God that I worship. And I walk in the way. So I worship the God of my fathers, believing all things which are written, believing all things which are written in the law, in the Torah, and in the prophets. What supposed Christian today can make that statement and be true before the judgment seat of God, of Jesus Christ? Only the ones who are genuine, genuine followers of Christ, they can call themselves Christians in that sense, followers of Christ, you see. But the others don't recognize them as Christians. You know, you don't believe in the Trinity, pagan doctrine, you're not a Christian. You don't believe in heaven and hell, you're not a Christian. You don't believe in the rapture, you're not a Christian, and so forth, and all kind of deceptions and lies. You don't believe in Easter and Christmas, you're not a Christian, you see. Well, Paul was not either, that kind of a Christian. The apostles were not. Christ was not. They all worshipped God and believed and obeyed. Believing is nothing. The devil, you know, believes all those things, but he doesn't obey. And they believed all the things which are written in the Torah and in the prophets. They don't say, well, that's old stuff. It's not for us. Done away with. So it makes it here very plain. Before the whole world, you know, if they're willing to listen, this is what the Apostle Paul's defense is all about. And yet you don't find people following in his footsteps, even though they claim, well, he's the head of our religion, you know, the founder of Christianity. And he took away, you know, separated the Christians from the Jews. And so we've got now two religions. You've got Judaism, we've got Christianity. You've got your God, we've got our God. You've got your theology, your laws, your holy days, and all that. You know, you're welcome to it. Those strict things, we don't want it. We don't want anything to do with it. That's exactly what Origen was writing, and Epiphanius, that is Epiphanius, and many others. All that stuff, you know, they're all fettered, you know, all those Nazarenes, they're all fettered. But that old stuff, you know, that law, you know, that horrible law, you see. Circumcision and Sabbath, you know, and holidays and clean and unclean food and things like that. We have nothing to do with that. So we are Christians, they are not. You see? That's how poisoned, polluted, demented, perverted are those minds and hearts. And they are the ones that injected their perversion into the minds of all those who became known later on as Christians. Christianity. And to this very day, they wallow in that mire and cesspool, and when they come before the great God of heaven and earth, you see, the one was sent by the Father, the Most High, who is greater than him, and they stand before his judgment seat, that's what he's going to tell them. I never knew you because you are lawless. Get out of here. He's going to throw them out. Well, if you want to follow in that direction, continue until the end, and then find out, you see, wouldn't be charitable to say you're welcome to it, because that's not really a good thing to do. It's best, as God says, you know, if you have an ear, hear, listen, do something about it. Look at the mirror of the law, as James would say. See yourself where you really stand. Do you believe in all the things? Do you obey all the things that are written in the law and the prophets? And if you are not, you are not. Walk in the footsteps that the apostles of Christ did. Paul and all the others, they all were of the same mind and heart. And so he says, I have hope in God, which they themselves also accept. You know, well, we all have the same hope. There will be a resurrection of the dead. You see? Why do you need a resurrection from the dead? You know, if when you die, you go to heaven. Or if you go to hell, you don't need a resurrection. You're alive. You are either in heaven or in hell. Well, nobody at that time believed in those kind of lies. Those were pagan ideas. Later on, were injected into even Judaism. Not only in the pagan religion that was always there anyway, now they called it, you know, Christianity. It was still a pagan religion. You can call it by any other name. It's still what it was, and it is to this very day. And so he says, I believe in that. They believe in that too. And obviously the high priest didn't. Those who accused him didn't. But all the Pharisees, the majority of the people of Israel, they believed it. So he's not talking about this particular group that is here. Even though they have hope in God, but they really don't believe the resurrection. They didn't believe that. They didn't believe in angels. And so it says, I believe in the resurrection of the dead, both of the just and the unjust. You see, the righteous and the unrighteous all need to be resurrected. And if they are not, they'll all be dead forever. It's as simple as that. They will not exist. And that's where you find Father Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and all the prophets and Moses and David and all the apostles of Jesus Christ and Mary, the one that people deify later on, made her a goddess, queen of heaven. And they all pray to her and talk to her and claim, you know, she appears to them here and there and all that. This is all lies and deceptions, you see. And the devil and his demons are having a lot of fun playing with all those minds and hearts who are so few, you know, foolish, you see. And insane, spiritually. And they believe all the superstitions. All followers, without their realization, no matter how nice and good and sincere they are, of demonic spirits, of unclean spirits, of the devil himself. And what a rude awakening they're going to have in the judgment day. So he says, this is what is going to happen, and I believe in that. This being so, I myself also strive to have a conscience without offense toward God and men. Didn't say toward Christ and men, toward God and men. And if he was a law-abiding citizen, he could say that. The law of God, the Torah of God. But if he was not, he would be in offense toward God by transgression against the Torah, which all those who call themselves Christians, generally speaking, the exception of the very, very elect among them who are really genuine, you see, they're all offenders against the law of God. And that's the reason why Christ would tell them, you know, I don't even know you. I don't hang around with rebel rousers who hate the law of my father. In doing so, you hate me. You hate my law because I'm the epitome of it. And so he says, I tried very hard. I was striving very hard to have a conscience without offense toward God and men. Now, after many years, I came to bring alms and offerings to my nation. Well, if he's the head of Christianity, totally different people, Gentiles now, what need is there for him to come and bring offerings to his nation, to his people? You see? And this has double meaning, because there was famine in the land. So a lot of the churches, you know, brought contributions and he brought it with him. But also he came to the temple to bring offerings to the temple, to God. You see? And earlier, he took the Nazarite vow, but he could not really follow the law of God unless he went all the way when he came to Jerusalem to be purified in the temple. That's the reason why he needed to be there in the temple. You see? Not only to see the apostles, but to be in the temple and to fulfill by purification his own vow. That's the reason why the apostles told him, you know, you've got all these four men, well, you pay also their needs there, and you go and you all purify yourself. And so they all did. Now he's talking about that again. That's the law of God, never done away with. That's what Christ said. Heaven and earth shall pass, but not one jot or one tittle shall pass from the law. And Paul never transgressed that, never went against it, never taught against it. And when he spoke about the law, people did not understand what he's talking about. And so they twisted everything, as Peter said they would. They're unlearned. They don't understand what Paul is talking about, and so they're wrestling with the scriptures, he said, to their own destruction. And they brought it upon many others. And so he says, in the midst of which some Jews from Asia, the other ones that did it, the rebel rousers, they found me purified in the temple, neither with a mob nor with tumult. I was doing it peacefully with other Jews. No Gentiles there, no uncircumcised people. They didn't bring anyone there, even though they were believers in Christ and members of the body of Christ. But being uncircumcised, even the apostles wouldn't let them into the temple, because that's contrary to the Torah of God. Now, down the road, if they want to be circumcised, then they can make it into the temple. Not before that. And so in verse 19 we read that they ought to have been here before you to object if they had anything against me. So the people from Asia that saw him, they didn't bother to come down there. They were not interested in that, you see. And to begin with, they probably found out, you know, he didn't bring any Gentile there, so there was no case. But others did, you know, these Pharisees, because they had, you know, a bone to pick with him. And so he said, they didn't come here to accuse me, or else let those who are here themselves say, if they found any wrongdoing, that is in the law of God, in me, while I stood before the council. Didn't say anything wrong. I just talked about the resurrection. Unless it is for this one statement, which I cried out standing among them, concerning the resurrection of the dead, I am being judged by you this day. They didn't believe in it, because they are of the Sadducees. We didn't believe in the resurrection. Well, that's their problem, but the majority of the Jewish community believed it. And so that's the only thing that they can hold against me. But then if they hold it against him, well, they hold it against the entirety of the Jewish community, because by saying we don't believe in the resurrection, they're saying, well, you are all wet, you know, you're all wrong, and we are the only ones who are right. And so in verse 22, now we read the reaction of the governor. But when Felix heard these things, having more accurate knowledge of the way, you see, that's the only way it is described. No Christianity, no Christians, no Christian doctrines and principles, no catechism and all those things that came later on. The way, the same way from the beginning of time. And so we've got all this body of witnesses to the real truth. not the false one, the fabricated one that came later on, supposedly is Christianity and the religion of the Apostle Paul. You see? And people swallowed it and believed it, and to this very day they think, well, that's the way it has been for many, many centuries. It's got to be the truth. Well, it does not match the biblical teachings. And so all those who call themselves ministers of the Gospels are nothing but liars to the core. Oh, they may quote some passages which are true, some doctrines, some things about Christ. As he said, many shall come in my name, saying that I am the Christ, and say, obviously, all kind of things in order to make people believe Christ loves you, he died for you, you know, his blood atones for you, and he taught us to be nice and merciful and kind and things like that, and they bring you all kind of examples, the Samaritan, Good Samaritan, and you know, many teachings like that, and there are a lot of really sincere people, good people, decent people out there who study the Word of God and they believe all those things and all the other lies that they were taught from their youth, swallowing the whole thing. That makes it wrong. Lie, evil, not proper, not righteous in the sight of God. And therefore, no matter what all the good works that people have done in the name of Christ, he will tell them, after they tell him about all the good works they've done in his name, I never knew you. Because you are lawless. When you are apart from the law of God and against it, it doesn't make any difference how sincere you are and how good you are and how devout you are and how kind and merciful you are, how so-called Christian you are, quote unquote. Jesus Christ doesn't know you because you are lawless. You despise his law. You do not walk in the way, in the commandments which he walked of his Father. There is only one religion, one lawgiver, and that's not Christ, but God. And he made it very plain. I kept my Father's commandments, and you better do too. If you want to enter into life, keep the commandments. If you love me, keep the commandments. And as John said later on, by this we know that we love him because we keep his commandments, and those who don't, he says, they are liars. Even though they may have, you know, quite a bit of truth, it still makes you a liar when you inject lies into the truth. It's no longer the truth. It's vomit in the sight of God. So, all those nice, good Christians, kind, sincere, devout, good people, which they are not going to be accepted because there is vomit in them and poison which is not of him. And God is not interested in a hybrid personality of the devil and Christ in any person, and he's not going to find it acceptable. You're either of God or of the devil. Either or. No in between. No gray areas. No compromise. God is not mocked. Until people get it into their head, they can call themselves all they want, good Christians. And there are even a lot of devout and good people who have the Holy Spirit and still have a lot of vomit in them, of the whore and the harlots out of which they came, and they don't realize it. As soon as he mentioned the law to them, they resent it. They don't want to hear about it. Why don't you talk to us about love? Why don't you talk to us about the law in the New Testament? We don't want to hear about that law in the Old Testament. Why not? Jesus Christ is the one that gave it, receiving it from his Father, coming down to this earth and giving it to his creation. Adam and Eve, first ones, and then all those that came later on, commanded all of them to walk in it. Came in person on Mount Sinai, descended there, and gave it to all of Israel, and told them to walk in it forever, and teach all mankind, which they still would when the time comes, when he brings them back to the land. There is no other religion, other faith, other doctrine. That's the way. You don't walk in it, you're kidding yourself that you're a follower of God in any given religion. And the whole world is full of liars, and the day is coming. That's the reason for the great wrath of God, which is going to be poured upon the face of the whole earth. The tribulation and the day of the Lord. And not many are going to be left after that. There's some accounts about 10% who are going to be left from the people of Israel. And yet God made that statement. Though I make a full end of the nations, of the Gentiles, I'm not going to make a full end of you. What is he saying by that? Those who want to wait until that day, they're going to find out. because he made it very plain some nations is going to totally blot them out from under heaven. Like the people of Edom, leave only very few orphans and few widows, and Amalek, find them, you know, to this very day fighting, you know, his own people for a land that he gave them to all of Israel, and we'll call it Arab lands. Well, I got to find out pretty soon the God of heaven and earth, and on whose side he is. And so, Felix, fully aware of that, we read in verse 22, when he heard these things, having more accurate knowledge of the way, he adjourned the proceedings and said, when Lysias, the commander, comes down, I will make a decision in your case. I want to hear this, you know, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Because he's been listening to a lot of lies here, and was not about to fall for it. He knew exactly what the Apostle Paul was talking about, because he had a more perfect and accurate knowledge of the way. He was not an ignorant person. So he knew what was on the heart of those people that came and accused him, the Apostle Paul, falsely. And so he commanded the centurion to keep Paul and to let him have liberty. So he's already making it very plain. He doesn't find him in the wrong or guilty. He hasn't, you know, done or said anything wrong against the law of God. He knows it very well. Nobody can pull the wool over his head. So the oratory capability of this Tertullian, you know, didn't do much and didn't avail anything to the Jews. Anyway, we'll stop again this point. Mordecai Joseph, greetings to all of God's people.